Hey everyone, this is Dina Jones, one of the founders of Joe Bean Roasters. At Joe Bean, our mission, Coffee That Lifts Everyone, is about giving selling power back to coffee farmers, as well as purchasing power into the hands of our customers. Through our network of farmers, we're able to bring you naturally grown, amazing coffee directly. Our long-term farming partners negotiate pricing based on cost of production, as well as quality of product, not on fluctuating, unpredictable market prices. This enables them to create thriving businesses with bright futures. And our customers get empowered knowing exactly who grows their coffee and how, as well as knowing they are a part of a new, sustainable, global coffee network. To try our coffee, go to JoeBeanRoasters.com and be sure to check out our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription to receive a rotating selection of single-origin coffee delivered right to your door. Thank you to all our Rochester friends who have supported us and our farming partners so wonderfully over the years. You are making a difference with every bag.
This is Evan Dawson. If you like conversations that take you beyond the headlines, join me on Connections. Every day, we dig into the issues shaping Rochester with the people living them, researching them, even trying to change them. No hot takes, no shouting most of the time. Just real conversations to keep you involved in your community. Listen to Connections wherever you get your podcasts.
The following footage is certified PG. Pretty great.
It's Anomaly Presents with your friends, the Podcastronauts.
Sounds like a lot of supernatural baloney to me.
Supernatural. Perhaps. Baloney, perhaps not.
Welcome to the Anomaly Presents podcast. My name is Matt Austin. This is a podcast about the genre movies that inspired a genre film festival. That's the Anomaly Film Festival coming to you this November 11th through the 15th.
Yeah.
In we the need year that extra day. We need that extra day to pack in all the goodness. It will be taking place once again at the Little Theater and Dryden Theater in beautiful Rochester, New York. We are here with our cast of podcastronauts that we usually have here. It's Kristen Pelk Pacheco.
Hey, everybody. Happy to be here.
It's Megan Murphy.
Hey, they're still taking my calls. Haven't dropped out yet.
And we are very lucky to have a guest here tonight to discuss the film Wait Until Dark. It's a classic, and who better to have to discuss it with us than Meredith Berg, filmmaker, producer, short film at Anomaly. If you saw Tether, Meredith directed, wrote that. Her new horror film, you're shooting that this summer, right? It's called Stay, starring Erica Alexander. You've got a production company, Beryllium Productions, with your husband, right? Ethan Irwin. And do you want to take a second and talk about Stay and also the first film you're producing?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so excited to talk to all of you and so excited to talk about this movie, Wait Until Dark. It's one of my favorites. Maybe not, it's one of my top. It's the top favorites change all the time. I cannot commit, but it's definitely in the top. And yeah, I'm so excited. I just started my production company with my partner and producing partner, Ethan Irwin. And for our right out the gate, we have a film shooting in May that is an action comedy with Jason Statham called Jason Statham Stole My Bike that David Leitch is directing that we're shooting in May in London, which we're very excited about. And then later toward the end of summer and into fall, I'll be shooting my first feature as a director, which is a supernatural horror called Stay that is starring Erica Alexander as a traveling businesswoman who works way too hard and travels way too much for her company that takes way too much. And she stays in off-brand hotels to save her billion-dollar company money. And she stays at a particularly off-brand hotel that will not let her leave. And at first, she's working so hard, she doesn't even notice. And it's like taking hair in the shower. It's taking like little things out of the luggage. All the hotels watching all the hotels part of it and alive. And when she has a bloody nose, it takes the blood out of the tissue into the furniture. Oh. It just wants to take and take and take and take. And it's not until she starts to leave that she's like, wait a minute, this hallway already went down this hallway. This door is locked. This door is locked. She realizes she can't get out and it wants the rest of her. And she's trying to get out before it can consume her. And she's actually realizing that even if she did get out, she'd really be trapped in her all-consuming job.
Can't wait.
I'm ready. Yeah, no, it doesn't. It's not. I can't go see her right now. This is the worst.
You can hear the calendar.
Yeah, I'm marking it now. That's very much my kind of stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, it's very fun. And Erica plays the lead of Layla, and she's just going to be so brilliant. She's so intelligent, and she's so funny. So it's not like a slog. And even though the material is quite dark and scary, she has such charm and wit. She's going to keep it kind of light amidst the darker times. So that's going to be like a nice roller coaster.
I am so thrilled. I think I have a new favorite genre movie, and it's just it's Meredith Berg movies. I think
that's
my favorite genre. I am so excited. Tether was a great short, and I'm just excited to see everything that you make.
Thank you.
We are here to talk about Wait Until Dark, which is a brand new movie to the three of us. And Meredith, this is one of your favorites, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is definitely a formative experience. Also, it was a play before it was a film. And I'm originally a theater director, and I absolutely love seeing the DNA of theater and everything. So I think it hits me on both those levels.
It was absolutely, it's the perfect thrill. I saw, as I was doing some research here, it was described as the best movie Hitchcock never made.
Oh, that's a great description.
And I really enjoyed that. So it came out 1967, right? And it's really just so unbelievably actor-driven. I think that's really an amazing thing. It's really a murderer's row, if you'll pardon the phrasing. Incredible character actors. Let's go with this. What was your reaction to the neophytes to it? I know what mine was. KP, do you want to talk about how you reacted when you watched this? Was it yesterday in daylight?
No,
unfortunately,
it was literally today. It was literally today because I just got back in town. So, I wish I could watch. I'm going to rewatch it before I take it back to the library at dark, like at nighttime, because that's what it needs to be enjoyed. But. At first I was like, okay, I like Audrey Hepburn and just about anything I see her in. I'm really intrigued by this. And the little girl kind of losing it for a minute took me out. And then immediately I kind of jumped back in once they settled down. And then I'm like, okay, how is this going to play out? How are we going to start the cat and mouse part a little bit? How is she going to slowly start to catch on? And then the last, you know, like 15 minutes, I'm like, clenching the couch. I'm like, oh no. Yes, it ratchets up the tension because you're just kind of following along for a little bit, waiting for it to get bad. Mm. And then it really ramps it up. So, yeah.
I guess as for me, like I was aware of it, right? It's one of those films, like it's always been on my list, right? And you know, I've seen stills and clips, but of course, seeing it all together, it's so well constructed. Like it tells you everything you need to know, so you understand later. I loved all those little bits of even just like Lisa in the beginning, our drug mule, right? The fact that like she sees Sam, who is our protagonist's like boyfriend. Right. Like she already kind of thinks, oh, we have a little connection because she like helps him in the airplane. So then that's why she goes to him when she needs to get rid of the doll. Like just that little stuff. Like it's not out of nowhere. It was just that little connection that we all could have done. Like, yeah, if someone helped me. And then all of a sudden I'm the face of like, here, take this heroin stuffed doll for me. It's definitely not going to cause any problems. Or stuff like the squeaky shoes, which is so great because we hear it too. Like, we know that just as she's recognizing that. I mean, I'll go through and talk about, like, all these little details that come in. I love the setup of a character who is newly blind, so it understands why she's still maneuvering through this world. And I love the story of, like, she doubts herself. And it's partly like, listen, I don't like Sam. I don't like her boyfriend. I think he's kind of a jerk, right? He's not helping the situation because she feels less than it because he... I'm sure it's coming from a place of, I just want you to be able to function, right? But she, in her head's like, well, I'm helpless, right? So the whole story is this woman, as she realizes how alone she is in the situation, she has to not be helpless, but not, I'm a total badass now, but in a, okay, yes. I am alone. I have to figure this out way, which I love, because she's panicking the whole time at the end. Understandably, but still focused, which I think you're just locked in with Audrey Hepburn the entire time. You're with Susie, like, oh my god, what would I do? It's one of those movies where you're like, what would I do? I don't know. So yeah, all that just all those little setups that pay off is very satisfying. What about you, Matt? Yeah, you got to answer question two.
Well, thanks, Meg.
Yeah, no, I
think that's exactly right. It unfolds really well as kind of a classic mystery. It's fun to try and, I mean, you kind of know what it is, but you're following the breadcrumbs as Susie's following them, even though obviously you know the overarching, you know, what wrote in his gang. I guess we should probably do a little bit of a plot synopsis here, but essentially, there's a drug mule. She has a doll with heroin inside of it. She leaves the doll with Sam, Susie's boyfriend. And then we get a couple con men that show up at the apartment to try and find the doll. And then there's a scheme formed by the con men and then another criminal, which is played by the incredible Alan Arkin. Who absolutely
two con men and a complete psychopath.
Yeah, he's
two con men and a psychopath.
Very interesting because he's too. Yes, he's like so laid back, and then the first time he takes the knife out, you're like, oh, he is very dangerous.
Yeah. He has a knife that he named. Like right there, you're like, oh, I'm starting to clue in.
And his like low quietness while he's completely psychotic is so scary.
Yeah.
Terrifying. As someone who's known Alan Arkin as, you know, genteel older gentleman, you know, kind of wry guy, you know, to see him in this where he's just completely quietly unhinged is incredible. I loved it. Yeah. With the knife, Cassandra. Well, what does she do? She's the referee of this. Like, whoa, that is cold as ice.
Right.
But it's essentially these three, criminals trying to trick Susie into helping them find the doll in the apartment. So it's them playing this game. It's essentially a cat and mouse game between the three of them where they've come up with these different ruses, including costumes, which were hilarious.
They don't realize that she's blind at first.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, this is going to be so much easier. And then they don't.
Yeah.
It's basically like an hour of them gaslighting Susie into thinking this something's happening and her boyfriend is probably involved. So it's for the best, you know, and you get there and you're getting angry for her. Yeah. You're like, these guys are such assholes. and she's invulnerable. She's allowed to be vulnerable in this movie. Right. Mm-hmm. So I love that because it's about, you know, just you're getting angry and you're like, but you're also like, oh, my God, how is she going to. Especially once her boyfriend's like, I'm just going to take off. Don't worry. You got this. And then he leaves the cigarette butt in the ashtray. I'm like, that wasn't a plan or a test. That was just him, like, endangering his own girlfriend before the plot even happens.
The men in this movie are atrocious from start to finish. And like,
I'm like, what? Right.
Yeah.
The one thing that a modern day maybe version would be like, by going through this entire journey, this horrible trial that she goes through, she should have the strength at the end to break up with Sam.
That's my one thing. I was like, don't go to him.
When he's like, walk to me. This poor woman is beyond traumatized.
My God.
Yeah, that's the final thing she does.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I think the character work is so great. Like all these characters are, cause it's a fairly, I would say, simple setup, right? Newly blind lady, two con artists and a psychopath are playing characters to try to manipulate and trick her into giving a doll, which she doesn't even know where it is at first, right? She's just trying to maneuver through a situation, while her boyfriend is, you know, off. He's also being manipulated, but who gives a crap? He's off and does not seem to care.
We are very not Sam here.
I'm
going to be honest. I'm sorry. No Sam here.
No, it's there.
But like, yeah. But so, I want to start with, and maybe, like what your thoughts on this, Meredith. I love that, like, we have one of the con artists, the one, was it Tallman, played by Richard Crenna, who is, he's more sympathetic than Sam in many ways, which I think is very important. First, to kind of so you start having hope. If anyone's going to like maybe not terrorize and murder this blind woman, it'll be him. But also he's doing something the most manipulative because he's like pretending to be her boyfriend's friend. And then like, he's going to be the supportive one who shows up when she needs, like, oh yeah. Or, you know, I mean, they're always, yeah.
He even takes his glove off to like touch her.
Oh my God, the glove thing. But like, so I'm very curious, especially like we're talking about these villains. We have like the nice guy, the like the ex-cop who's just kind of a loaf, but that's what his job is, right? And then you have like a man who you don't know what his limits are. Absolutely. You keep learning that there right. are none.
Yeah.
Right. So like, what kind of like that kind of setup, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what about that? Like, did you like? I would guess that it might be something that really drew you in. Like, you're interested in like absolutely. How they working.
It's so great because, again, like you're saying, you are throughout the film hoping for different things to work out for her and getting more and more terrified that she's not going to have a way out.
Yeah,
and so you're like clutching onto this idea, maybe this criminal isn't so bad.
Yeah. It's a wild situation to be in where you're like, come on, one bad guy.
Or maybe this little girl, Gloria, who's such a chaos monkey. She gives me so much anxiety. But like, what is she going to do? Like, this is kind of a cruel child.
She's like, I wish every day was like this.
Yeah, right? She's on board.
Take away her support system little by little with all these things, right? Then you realize how little support she actually had. And until she really is forced to just do it herself. And I love, love, love stories where it's unfair. Like, it's unfair. This protagonist is so screwed. Everything is against them. There's no way they're going to make it through, but they have to somehow anyway. And I love that in a story. And I love that there's like, I mean, the point, there's like wants and needs. I always love in a story when want and need is like really clear and like combat with each other. You really want someone to save her, but what you need is for her to save herself. So there's so many times when you almost get what you want, but you're really supposed to get what you need. And I love that push and pull with the audience. And it only really works if you also want the want. You know, if you see the want, you're like, no, you don't really want, that's not actually better for you. Get what you need. It doesn't work. But when you're like, no, just maybe the criminal will solve everything. It's fine. Like, I'll take it.
Well, I love that setup that they're very clear that, you know, they're being blackmailed into this next level. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just con men. Their whole thing, the reason they knew the mule Lisa is they had a whole setup where, like, she would basically tempt married men, and then they play the whole, like, the ex-cop would play the cop. And so you have the idea of, like, that was the level they were at. In fact, I believe Tallman at one point asks, is anyone going to get hurt when a rote is, right? So, again, it's offering this, like, oh, okay, if anything, it'll probably be him. Right, he's making a human connection with her.
Yeah,
here, everyone watches. We're probably going to go into spoilers at some point, so just so you all know, because we're discussing the film, when that moment comes, when like, okay, he's at the end when she's like, "I'm not giving you the doll," right? Because he's the one who shows up first, right? Mm-hmm. So, and he's like, "Well, listen, we've killed Rote, which is wild because they haven't."
Yeah,
but
yeah,
he's like, "You know what? Okay, like," and he's going to leave. She's like, "Okay, all right." He's had it. They took it, and then he's in the doorway, and everything's already all dark. And so you can't see behind him. And then all of a sudden he goes, bleh! And you realize that Rote's behind him and stabbed him and then pushes his body down. And you're like, the way it kicks you in the chest and takes your oxygen, because you're like her best bet right now is dead. He's gone.
That support system is gone. Even though it wasn't perfect, you're desperate for Tart. Gone. Yep. Yes.
And I just thought that was such a great setup for the end, because you're like, it just sucks all the oxygen out of you. You know?
Ugh. Yeah. It's so much like I love a great like character arc theme interwoven thing where it's so much about she's been kicked down by this new disability. And I love stories where like someone has a huge flaw and they could probably function highly, you know, they could probably ignore it. They could probably get by, you know, in a lesser life, but they could squeak by. And then you throw them into a situation where it's like, no, you have to change or die. And this is, I think, this very much informed me from you know, an early age seeing this. I don't know why I saw it at an early age. And but thanks, we're lucky to be on. But it's very much like, you know, you really are on this whole journey of her having to finally face this flaw and change or die. And it's so satisfying because of that. It's so emotionally satisfying. It's so cathartic because of that. And that drives so much of what I like to do as a storyteller. So Yeah, I mean, I loved every little bit that was like, well, this guy's a chance or da da da. And then I love that you were talking about how it sets up the rules for a while, and it sets up what she can figure out, what this area has and doesn't have, you know, in terms of lighting that she's not with. I love a rules based problem where, you know, like a quiet place or something where you're like, oh, they can hear you. Okay. I like to call those the floor is made of lava stories. You know, okay, the floor is made of lava. We know that. So as long as you don't touch the floor, you know, and then you throw in like, oh, no, but the couch is on fire. It's like, okay, now you can't, you know, so you already know one thing. And now, so you don't need to be told it again. And you now know what to be afraid of and how much things have ratcheted up. And I love that. Like, she is blind. That is, in a way, the mythology. That is the rule. And I love that that means... that is both a weakness and a strength. I love that her weakness becomes her strength. The whole, like, her smashing the lights, her trying to take away him being able to see, is one of my favorite things in all stories ever. The way that she her weakness becomes his weakness. Her strength is the best.
I love
that. I started. Oh, good.
I was like, I love that whole section, and I do. Yeah. Like, even starting from. Mike getting killed is like, this movie's really great about not showing you things and letting your brain kind of run wild with like the scariest bits. Because still as an adult, afraid of the dark, but like, so when it goes pitch black and you're hearing her kind of panicked and like trying to get away from him, right?
Hey everybody, it's Matt from the Anomaly Presents podcast. I want to take a moment to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts on the Limp Shore Podcast Network. It's Common Thread. Rory Van Grohl and Greg Benoit talk with their guests about how the values, philosophies, and sense of community found in hardcore punk has influenced the trajectory of their lived experiences in unexpected ways. It features organic discussions that illuminate how hardcore punk is the common thread that provides continuity throughout our lives and connects us to one another. It's Common Thread on the Lunch Door Podcast Network, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Yeah, but I will say, when that light turned on in the fridge, I was like, oh no,
so good. It's so good.
And you're like, set that, which I like. Yeah. You know, they have like
rule.
A
crap.
Yeah.
Well, what I love, I actually started making notes because there's a certain point where like you start realizing that she notices more than she's letting on. Right. Because we're noticing stuff, but like we don't know what she's noticing. So I started going like, and it sounds right. Like that one of the first things like she mentions is so this is a kind of a running gag in the beginning where our two con men realize they left fingerprints everywhere. And that's part of what wrote Danny's like, OK, because there is a corpse there. Like he stashed Lisa. Hey, guys, everyone, Lisa doesn't make it. And it's a great scare because she's like hanging in a garment bag in the closet.
Yeah.
And kind of appears, but oh, it's so good. But anyway, so like, oh no, right? But especially our ex-cop still kind of thinks that he can kind of fix this. So when he comes over pretending to be a cop, you see him just wiping down stuff as he's walking around. And but later, when, you know, Susie's talking to Mike, who she thinks she can trust, she's like, I don't know, there's something weird about the sergeant. He was like dusting. Is this house dirty? And you realize, oh, she heard him doing all that stuff.
He knows more than
she hears this. Yeah. She hears the squeaking of Roach's shoes when he shows up as the old Mr. Roach and then realizes they're basically the same shoes when he's playing young Mr. Roach. Fantastic. I love the one thing. So when these con artists are kind of like they're playing her and they're trying to time like who comes in when to like get her scared and then Mike will come in. So they're using the blinds in that face outwards in her apartment. So they'll do the classic little close and open, right? We find out she's heard the blinds being played with the entire time, which makes sense because they're not quiet and you do hear them on the soundtrack, which is just, oh, it's so good. Then she recognizes the tune.
She's very smart.
Yeah. She's smart. Yeah. She recognizes the doll's tune because it plays to make the style creepier. It's stuffed with heroin and it plays music.
It does everything. Right?
And it has dead eyes.
So I love all those little setups. It's all the stuff that you eventually go, oh, she's been paying attention. She doesn't know what it means yet. She doesn't know what it means yet, but she realizes, oh, that's weird. He's dust and stuff. And I love that because then it all plays in when she starts figuring out, like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. And then she asks Gloria, hey, can you see if there's a police car out there? Because Mike says there's a police car out there and they're watching me. And I love that you can see it click when she's like, nah, there's a van. And you can see her go like, oh. Who can I trust here? And that's just so great because it's all built up. Yes. So all this stuff that she's been trying to put together. And then that, Oh, you're like, oh, she's like, oh, shit. And I don't know. Yeah, you know, like, something bad's happening.
All the fear, all the tension, almost all the tension in this whole thing is dramatic irony. It's so much that we see what she can't see. And so when she is putting together, obviously she's doing this masterful Oscar nominated performance, but when she's putting it together, we see one and one equaling two, because we are seeing and we're waiting for her to put it together. And we see the moment she puts it together and also can't let him know she knows. So it's this really, really great dramatic irony for us and her, and then also for what she's doing to him. So it makes it so suspenseful. It's so good. Mm.
KP, I have a question, because we're heading towards the ending, right? And I know you don't like the dark, and you're not a fan of jump scares.
Sorry. This is one of the best top 10 jump scares of all time.
Top 10 jump scares. And I just, like, as a friend, KP, I'm curious, how did you experience, because the last part is her and Rope, because he's the only one left, because he's a psychopath killer. And he's like, well, now I've got this blind lady. There's no back. They make sure there's no back exit.
Yeah.
He's chained to the door. So now
he
doesn't matter if he gets a dollar or not. You're pretty sure he's going to kill her no matter what, because he enjoys it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this
100%.
She's in with the lion in the cage. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say it really hits. I mean, obviously, yeah, I'm like sitting there like, oh no, what I we're not done yet, because she hasn't gotten out yet.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. But it just hits so perfectly. Also, very acrobatic. I mean, he just left.
That like was a reach. I feel like if someone throw him off, like, I know, can I go and get a
ragdoll? You know, like trampolines with the...
That was the reaction. We were watching it last night, and my wife goes, did they launch him out of a cannon? How did that happen?
But it worked, because it's so sudden and like beyond so human sudden. Almost.
It really
coming
was.
Out from like darkness.
And you have this wide shot where you're seeing everything. Yeah. And yes, it's hanging on it. And you know, because you know the rules, you know exactly how far away she is from safe. So you're rooting for her, rooting for her, rooting for her. And you're like, oh, and you think she's pretty far away, but not further than the trampoline.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what? What's wild is watching that and the way it's framed, right? Because it's just like this horizontal.
Yes.
It's almost exactly the same as that jump scare in Exorcist 3. That famous one with the nurse, because it's like the exact same. It's coming from left to right. She's just about crossed over. You're like, you think something's going to happen and you don't know what it is. And here's the thing, even though you're ready, and you can't guess that it's just action leaping from the left, right? Yeah.
Yes, it is totally like that. Yes. And I wonder if it's because maybe that was everyone's favorite part of the play. So by that point, you were practically proscenium style shot, you know? And I wonder if it's because there was nothing better than having a person leap across an entire stage at the woman. Yeah. I must have killed in the theater.
Oh my God, right? I'd still, knowing it's coming, I'll still probably go,
Yeah.
Oh yeah, even when I know it's coming. And it's like Henry Mancini did the music, and like that sting
is so
And then another setup, which is Sam didn't tell her where the damn refrigerator plug was. He's like, you'll figure it out. And it turns out she'll have to figure out in the most dangerous situation where that is life or death. She has to turn that light off. So again, I'm swearing at Sam while I'm watching this. I just want, like, I'm cheering her on, but I'm also going, Sam, this was unnecessary.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like rewatching The Shining as an adult and being like, oh, this is her story. This is about how, you know, the social worker shows up early on and is like, this is not good. And she's like, it's getting better. And then she gets thrown into a situation where it's like, no, this is where you were going to go. He was going to kill you eventually.
Yeah.
We just sped it up. And so the end of that movie is, okay, now he's gone. You finally got rid of him. You did it. Like, I'm thinking, wait until dark. You need a tag where she's like, Sam, we're fucking done.
That's it. You know, I realize I can live without you. Thank you.
Confidence, but I don't need you. Yeah.
That moment, walk over to me. No, you walk out the door. This is what
Gloria walked over to her, and she's semi-feral.
She is. Yeah. She is a chaos monkey.
Hey, it's Pauly Guglielmo, host of the Pauly Guglielmo Show here on the Lunchador Podcast Network, where we talk entrepreneurship and all of the trials and tribulations, pitfalls and rewards, and there are many, of owning a small business. We do interviews with some of your local favorite business owners, learning how they built their brands, the struggles they faced along the way, and what they have in store for the future. And sometimes it's just me detailing my own daily wins and losses. It's called the Pauly Guglielmo Show, and I'd be honored if you'd check it out. New episodes come out every Sunday morning.
My God.
Yeah. I love Gloria because they set her up. You understand why she's a mess. Her parents are never there and she just got glasses, right? So, so when she like loses it and she's just throwing stuff at first, you're like, oh my God. But she instantly like, oh, she's a kid. Mm-hmm. She instantly like, oh, you're right. I was just upset, right? But it establishes like, oh, she's sassy.
And she's another unreliable support. Like she's not.
Right.
When she sends Gloria to go on like a little mission, you're like, I don't know about that one.
Yeah,
right. I mean, she's all you like, got, but you can't trust her.
But yeah, she's tougher than she's tougher because she's the one like where she's walking out because her whole goal is to go find Sam, tell him what's going on, right? And she meets the ex-cop out there and he's all like doing the whole like trying to intimidate, like, what do you have? And she's like, I'm a Girl Scout selling cookies. You want? So that little shitness pays off because she's not scared. Yes. She just she's having a great time.
Yeah, it's an adventure. Maybe it's like Riddle of Fire from, years ago where it's like a bunch of, you're just like, the kids don't understand the danger.
Yeah. The whole thing is a whole bunch of those kids do not understand that they are in real danger. so they can move through the world differently. Yeah.
That the first 35 minutes of Cloak and Dagger. Yeah. It's that exact thing where it's just
when a kid doesn't understand the danger, which makes them a wild card.
Yes.
I'm 12. There's no such thing as mortal danger. You know,
exactly. Sassy, and you're like, these are killers.
But it's been established she's the kind of person that will move furniture around on a blind woman. So there's really...
You don't know what she's going to do. That makes it way scarier than if she was like an angel. She has a terrible support system all the way around.
Yeah.
And the whole point is she needs to learn to do it herself.
Gloria's the whole reason she couldn't find the doll.
Mm-hmm.
Gloria's
oh my God.
Because Gloria
this kid just... Okay, Gloria. So oddly enough, again, might have saved it because if the doll had been there, who knows what would have happened? Because we had this feeling that if the two guys found it, they probably would have left her alone. But Rote was always going to finish all the tie, all the knots, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to sort of
believe. He enjoys it. With those little brown sunglasses. How could you know, like, oh, this guy's a freak?
Yeah, and a blind woman. I've never had one of those things. Like, oh, no.
What a performance. Like,
I don't think I could have handled him in any comedy role if I'd started with
that. Right?
No, that's exactly it. Yeah. I was so shocked because it's so against his type. But, oh my God, he was a menace. And I wish we had gotten more of that in his career, too. Oof, like, just
good.
Two ends of the same. Oh my God.
Man.
Because it's not even a lovable villain. It is truly like, oh, this guy is terrifying.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I know what he's capable of, and it's anything.
Yeah.
Right? It is anything.
There's no reasoning with him. There's not like, you already know. You're not going to waste time on it because you know it's not this. No, he's a monster. He's barely human. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not that like over the top chaotic. Antisocial behavior. It's that really quiet. He's not the Joker.
The quiet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything is really calculated.
So just bloodthirsty. Like, I was going to say violent, but really it's more bloodthirsty. Nope. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even like when he's mouse playing with a cat and mouse. What I'm thinking is like a cat. It's like a Russian doll of cat and mouse games happening.
Yes.
It's like he's explaining to the con men. He's like, when he's telling Susie, he's like, oh yeah, I just played along with them. It was always going to kind of end up this way because that's who they want. That's what they're used to. And that's what they thought. He's like, they're just playing superhero, comic book games. And I'm over here playing Murder House.
Exactly.
He's ahead of everyone because he's completely unheld back. Yeah. Like he's completely he is in a way the most powerful, most free because no morals.
Yeah.
Nothing holding him back. He's just waiting to kill.
His first appearance, right? He's the whole reason that Lisa gave the doll to Sam because, like, she's coming off the plane and she just sees him and she knows instantly, bad news. Yep, bad yes. news, bad. Like, it's almost like she already knows, like, it's over, but she's trying to feel like, okay, if I just get this doll away so yes. I can be like, I don't know yes, what you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. So even that for, and he's just, well, how we see as an audience is he's up kind of high. He's at some sort of vantage point in the airport, just with those round sunglasses that you can't see his eyes.
Well, those sunglasses. Those are psycho sunglasses.
Yeah. Those are, that's what I'm saying. You can't see his eyes. Yeah, and I think like that visual language is already letting you know. Mm-hmm. You don't know who he is, but like bad news. Bad. So when he walks through that door, you're like, mm-hmm. Uh-oh, no, he's here now at our protagonist's apartment, mm-hmm. which we will get to know very well, which I appreciate.
Which again, he sees more than she sees to start out with, right? Yeah. He's spying on her. So there's a lot of like, you know, a lot of dramatic irony. There's a lot of like within so many people are hiding things from some of the others. And then the audience is the only one who's like, he's right there. And they don't know.
Oh God. Oh, the perfect example of he's right there. Kind
he's
of
right
movie.
There. Yeah.
Susie.
I'm thinking a good example of that is when, like Gloria puts the doll back and then she's starting to help. She's like, oh, he's coming to the window. And you can see the doll still slightly hanging out of the couch. But, you know, like,
you're like,
no, please.
It only works because you know all the parts. You know all the people.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think one of the reasons that, you know, that works so well, rules work so well is like that, you know, when to be scared. Like, for instance, you know, if you're falling asleep, Freddy's gonna get you. You know, and so if you like, you see someone start to nod off, you're like, no,
please stop.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Get that hypnosil. Get that stuff.
Yeah. And I think that from a very early age, I was just like in love with the puzzle and the rules, and like, okay, this is the problem. Now, how do you get out of it? But without breaking any rules, because then it's like magic. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Nothing matters anymore. And you lose you lose all the tension. So it's like, no. It's that hard. And she still has to live.
Yeah. I appreciate that because I feel like an audience you're lied to when the rules get like broken. Because mm-hmm. you're like, no, I believed up to this. Not that you can't, like, experimental, but, like, if I'm talking about a well-put-together plot, mm-hmm. it's the pieces coming together, not the, hey, wait, you said this wasn't, like, you said you couldn't do this, and then you did this. Like, it loses some of that that pleasure.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It's like, this is, like, action. It's not horror, but, like, speed. You know, if the car goes below, was it 55 miles an hour? Whatever the bus goes below, 55 miles an hour? If like at one point you're like, oh, it's just got to go with 50 for a second. Don't worry. Oopsie. Okay, now we're good. No. You would lose all interest. Yeah, you would lose all suspense.
All done with you, Sandra.
What?
I would have, though.
Like, then I'm not scared anymore. What are you talking about? Yes. It's not like that.
And I feel like it's more powerful, too, because it plays with rules that aren't just built for the movie. It's basically that same archetypical British mystery, like it's the Agatha Christie archetype, it's the Dorothy Sayers archetype.
It feels a little Ealing Street.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Like the Alec Guinness ones, like was it Arsenic and Overlay? What was the other? God, yeah. Those ones where like the little nasty murder thrillers where everyone's lying to each other, and half of them are Alec Guinness.
Yeah. So right, exactly. The audience walks in with those preconceived notions of this is how this mystery is going to work, It's all unfolding around them. They're like, this is the way the set pieces are. But the fun is now we're watching Audrey Hepburn play the part of Poirot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
While the rules are being broken all around her, which I think is fantastic. It's such a cool like juxtaposition of how things usually work that it absolutely blew me away. Mm.
Exactly.
I have to mention the end song. Cracked me up so hard because like it's this big thriller, right? Like it's this big thriller, blah blah blah, and then this jazzy Henry Mancini, like it feels like the love theme to Wait Until Dark. I was like, hey, I don't know if it fits the movie, but I'm feeling okay.
It's to heal That's you so after that jump scare.
Everything's gonna be
like,
fine.
Listen, we need a tie-in on the radio. So like, marketing, like,
the music is great in the film. It just seemed so weird because I think you're right, Meredith. Like, it was probably for radio play.
Yeah.
You can't play the Sting.
Come soon, cool. Putting
it cracked me up so hard.
Can you imagine going to see that movie because of like the radio song and being like, what is this?
Oh, it's about people falling in love in New York City, you know.
It also had like absolutely peak marketing. It was the poster that said, we're going to bring the theater to, was it Below the Legal Limit of Darkness?
Yes.
For you to watch this film. It was, yep, it was that one. And I was like, just so you know, warning, warning, this is Below the Legal Limit of Darkness. Cool.
For William Cassily. Yeah?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm so disappointed because one of the things I want to do, have you seen the trailer for this?
I don't know if I have.
If you get a minute, and we'll put a link to it on the podcast episode when it comes out. But the trailer is one of the best trailers I've ever seen because it's very much that. It puts a warning slide up that says, you know, in the last 10 minutes of this film, we will make sure that it's completely dark.
Oh, yeah.
If you're smoking in the theater, please extinguish your cigarettes.
That's good.
And also, of course, no one will be admitted in the last 10 minutes. And it's right after this, like, cut after cut after cut of the most nightmarish things happening to, to Audrey Hepburn.
And it, like, I mean, they weren't lying.
No, it's so on the money. It came up, I rented it on iTunes Store or whatever it is. So when you do that, the trailer plays as you're going to buy the thing. So I was like, it was Sunday afternoon and I was like, let me throw this on. And I have an almost 11-year-old. I was like, we can all sit and watch this. It's like a cool Audrey Hepburn thriller. And the trailer came up and they froze. They're playing Pokemon or whatever on their Switch. And that came up. And by the end of the trailer, they were just like, and I looked at my wife. I was like, so I guess we're going to watch this later. This is not going to be because it's that. Yeah. Oh, so perfectly cut together trailer. It's perfect.
They call that a marketing event. It's an event movie or an event.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting to see even then sort of like you have to come, you have to see it. It's only in the theater. You're going to get this experience, you know.
Interesting. We know it's interesting. We just, Anomaly just partnered to do a sneak peek for Undertone. And it's so interesting because that is a film that it pays off being in a theater because it is very audio based. It's a podcast where like spooky stuff's being listened to and oh no, maybe something's like being released, right? And they literally have like near the end, there's parts that are almost pitch black where the screen goes dark where you are listening. And it's so interesting because I saw this like less than a week later. I'm like, oh, that's still, it's so effective when you are in a place. Like you're not so safe in a theater because all of a sudden it's dark. You're like, wait a second, this isn't my home.
Yeah,
and
now you have
a sound system going on. And I was like, oh, I love that that's still continuing playing with what you can do in a theater.
Yeah.
Right?
I remember even telling Matt, not Matt Austin, Matt DeTurk.
You have too many Matts, I told you.
Too many.
When
we went to play Cinemarink, he wanted to lower the lights as much as we could. And I was like, people need to see in case of emergency.
Yeah. Well, it's a legal limit. What's the legal limit here?
Well, the legal limit.
Yeah. And he's like, it's black. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You know, thank you, KP, for being Cooler the voice of prevailed. Reason. Because I definitely would have been like, but pitch black? And you're like, lawsuit? And I'm like,
I didn't think that there was no such thing as them actually doing anything below any legal anything.
That's why I like an advertisement. Cool. Like, yeah, no, we're not doing that, but we're going to tell you we did that, so you
like,
think we did that.
The theater is already black. You know what the lights are on.
Yeah.
It's way cheaper than dragging a skeleton across the ceiling over the crowd, though. So that's like...
Yeah, we're going to make it happen, okay? I have a dream.
Yeah, Mary, I don't know if you know this, but we've been talking about doing an Emergo-style skeleton and showing House on Haunted Hill at Anomalies for 8 years now.
Just figuring out how do we do it where a theater lets us and it's safe, you know, like all of those.
At one point, Dan's brother drew a schematic of how we could actually make it work at the theater. So we've got that somewhere.
Okay. You have to have a dream. Yeah.
If we never do it, we should at least post
it online. Potato?
Okay. Potato, maybe with wings? Question mark. Write it down.
Make sure it's really soft in case anything goes wrong.
Yeah, it's latex and foam. Hey, buddy.
The one we have right now. If we take the post out of it, it'll be perfect.
Yeah, the eyes are resin though, so it really depends on how you got hit.
It's true.
Took out by a potato eye.
Yeah. I need a new potato where you just draw it on or something.
Oh. See, that's safe. You know what? We got to start taking notes, okay? We're going to do this.
I hope this happens.
Thank you.
Hopefully the next time you're at Anomaly, we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
Yes. And they found like a little sneak information about when I wrote Tether, I'd actually written the feature film first. And I knew there would be a lot of zero gravity involved. And so I knew if I took out that script, the first question would be like, oh, you've never done this. How are you going to do this? So I then wrote the short film, which is a different woman trapped in space than the feature woman who was trapped in space. But different, like in the short, it's a woman's first day. In the feature, she's been there way too long and it's getting weird and she needs to leave, but she won't leave. And until like that, bad enough things happen. So you can see like there's a lot of influence from Wait Until Dark in those. But that is where the short film came from. And then the feature film, just so you know a little bit about it, like it's a woman who had been in an accident that had killed her Sam. Sam's dead. It had killed her, fiance, and had damaged nerves in her legs. So she wears braces to get around when there's gravity on. And what she likes to do is she likes to turn the gravity off, pump some music, and dance in zero G. And she's been out too long at this one person, you know, lighthouse in space station. Because she doesn't want to deal with coming home, and she just like is just self-medicating out there basically, and until of course something worse finds her and forces her to do it. But it's very much like the zero G. She uses it as kind of a balm, but then when she does get attacked, that other person is not as used to zero G as she is. So the thing that is, you know, she might have braces, but if she can just manage to get the gravity off, if she can just get that last light, then the tables will turn. Oh. And so it is very heavily influenced by Wait Until Dark.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad we saw it. Because like, it's such a good setup. Ugh.
So I think we're coming to the end of our time here, Meredith. I'm sorry. I'd love to spend more.
Thank you.
So hopefully someday you'll come back. I know before we were talking about maybe doing So I Married an Axe Murderer, which is an all-time favorite.
Yes. Yes. But the whole Alan Arkin retrospective.
Yes.
We'll do a year of Arkin.
Yeah. Would you mind being our Alan Arkin expert? We'll anytime we have Arkin.
We'll have to go deep. Megan, you're going deep for us.
Yeah. I'll do it.
So before we go, Meredith, do you have anything you'd like to talk about? Anything you'd like to plug on our way out?
Well, we're going to be putting Tether, the short film, up on, I believe, YouTube will be where it lives. Oh, nice. We're making a Brillium channel. So we'll be putting that up publicly soon. Check out tethershortfilm.com for updates and then also for general updates about what my company is up to, you can look up beryllium.com. Beryllium spelled like the element on the periodic table, beryllium.com. And hopefully we're good about keeping that updated. And social media is always a challenge. But follow and keep in touch. And on Instagram, my handle is Mereberg Erwin, which is MereBergErwin. So please follow me there.
Thank you so much, Meredith. It's been a pleasure again. We had such a great time when you were here in Rochester with Tether. It really meant a lot that you came out, and you were an absolute delight all weekend. We still talk about what a blast. I think about when you came in from the snow and you... Because poor Meredith out from LA got to experience all four seasons.
It was magical. I'm like running around going, it's magical. They're like, you're so from LA. You're so from LA. And I'm like, it's falling from the sky. And you're like, oh, I got to get it on Instagram. You guys are like, okay.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. Thank it's you beautiful. Just don't be here in March.
Well, I definitely saw the best part where it was nice and fluffy and powdery.
Yeah.
First snow magic. I was like, oh, this is.
Yeah, it was.
Just it when it's cute.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was like that Gilmore Girls like magic first snow.
Yes. Mess. Yep.
Not
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite moments of the weekend. So again, thank you so much for joining us in Rochester.
Yeah, thank you for having Tether.
Oh, yeah,
we loved it. We were just
it's fantastic.
Instantly we're like, we're showing this.
Yep.
We're like, that's it. That's it. 100% put it in.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That means a lot.
Can't recommend it enough. Really looking forward to seeing Stay. Really looking forward to seeing Jason Statham Stole My Bike. Just looking forward to just everything Meredith Berg is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
So yes. Thank you for joining us. We've been the Anomaly Presents podcast. We are part of the Anomaly Film Festival. It's happening this November 11th through 15th in beautiful Rochester, New York. The Dryden Theater, the Little Theater. I can't guarantee snow, but we'll do our best. If you're looking for us, we're Anomaly Film Fest on all the social medias, anomalyfilmfest.com. That's all for us this week. Thank you again to Meredith, and thank you for listening. We'll catch you again soon. Take care. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network. Wick will be back.